Oops the Podcast, Episode 4, Dick Gabriel. The Oops the Podcast brings you up to speed on topics covered at this year's Oopsla Conference, which takes place in October 2008 in Nashville, Tennessee. For more information, visit the conference website at oopsla.org. The Oopsla Podcast is co-produced by Software Engineering Radio and Dim Sum Thinking. I'm Daniel Steinberg, your host for this episode. In this episode, we talked to Dick Gabriel, who was last year's conference chair. I began by asking if he was a bit more relaxed preparing for this year's Oopsla. He said he was more relaxed, but seemed to be almost as busy.
I have an essay that's been accepted. I've done a lot of work after its acceptance to further improve it. Kevin Sullivan and I are having an all-week workshop on photographing conferences. And also, in future years, it looks like Onward and Essays are starting to consider spinning off. So in 2009, there will be a steering committee for Onward. It'll still be part of Oopsla, but it'll have its own identity, its own separate website, its own poster, its own logo. And then if that goes well, it might spin off. And so I'm the chair of that steering committee right now. And so there's a lot of work preparing for that. So that'll be announced, and we need materials for Oopsla this year.
You've helped push Oopsla in interesting directions recently. Can you talk a bit about the motivation for the Onward track?
During the 70s and 80s, when I was, young and impressionable, the papers that appeared in a lot of the conferences I went to, which were artificial intelligence and object-oriented conferences, had a lot of big ideas. For example, in the mid to late 80s, Self, David Unger's programming language, was a paper. Back then, it seemed like there was room in the conferences for, working on the details, of memory management and compilation and smaller but really important problems. But there was also space for big ideas and, ideas not completely worked out, but hey, doesn't this sound interesting? And here's why. And so those conferences were really exciting. And toward the end of the 90s, it seemed like those big idea papers were disappeared. It wasn't that people weren't writing them, but more that they weren't being accepted. And that was then discouraging people. And as I was on a lot of program committees in the late 90s, it seemed like if there wasn't really substantial proof that the idea worked, it wasn't going to be accepted. And that meant that the papers became smaller and smaller. So a smaller result, but a lot of substantiation. And I thought it'd be nice to go back to sort of make a venue for big idea papers, for people to think expansively, and to create a place where they could get, a real peer-reviewed publication out of it, rather than the equivalent of putting it on their website. And so that's why I started Onward, and then a few years later, I started Essays to sort of be the dual of that. Onward was saying, here's the way to go, here's my idea for the future, looking completely forward, and Essays is, well, here's where we've been, here's what we make of it, and here's what it teaches us about where to go in the future.
Onward is a place for big ideas, but it's not a place where anything goes.
No, absolutely not. Still has to be peer-reviewed. There's a set of criteria. Looking at the criteria of regular conferences, there's a heavy weight on substantiation. In Onward, we look at substantiation, but the argument, the novelty of the idea, the likelihood it'll make a difference, the presentation. And we basically weight the novelty and compelling argument more so than substantiation. But still, it has to be something that if you read it in a proceedings or you read it in a book, you'd say, well, it's not proven, but it sure seems like it's a reasonable thing to try. And if we look at the acceptance rates for Onward over the years, it's a lot lower than most of the other SIGPLAN conferences. So Onward has been very selective because of the criteria. It's very hard to write a compelling argument without having a proof of some sort behind it.
So as someone who's been around Oopsla for a long time, how would you help our listeners decide whether or not Oopsla is for them?
Well, what I try to tell people is, are you interested in any aspect of what it takes to get a device to do something, to produce what we would call software, how you figure out what software to build. Do you care about how it's built? Do you care about who builds it? Do you care about what it does, how it's maintained, how it maintains itself, how it's organized, how it's architected, you know, how to maintain it, how to test it? If you're interested in any of those things, then we try to make Oopsla be for you. Whether you're using OO or functional languages or logic languages, dynamic languages, really doesn't matter. We try, you know, we try to create places for people who are doing that to publish papers, to have workshops, to do tutorials, to do BOFs. You know, in that sense, maybe we've been too broad with Oopsla. If you're interested really in the theory of programming languages, then Oopsla is for you, but it's not as for you as Popple is. If you have the urge, you know, if you're interested in feeling the bits between your toes, then perhaps Oopsla is for you. If you're interested in, you know, what people go through to learn how to program, Oopsla is for you. If you're interested in sort of a very creative and eclectic community, I think Oopsla is a little bit more diverse than many. Last year, we had quite a large number of very young attendees. As I tell people, the histogram in previous Oopslas sort of started low on the left and grew to the right, meaning that there weren't so many young folks and there was a lot of older men and women. Last year, it kind of tilted the other way in that there were more people under 30 than sort of over 50. That was very refreshing to see.
You also lead by example. The 50 and 50 talk you and Guy Steele gave on the history of languages last year pushed the bounds of what an Oopsla keynote can be.
So what we tried to do is, even though we looked at the past, we didn't do it in a dry way. It wasn't a dry academic talk. We presented a lot of material, but we tried to do it using presentation techniques or tricks that are they're not usual. So we had a lot of visuals. We had movies, we had music, we had Guy Steele rapping and dancing, we even did the more cowbell thing. And so what we tried to do was we tried to show the younger folks that the past of computing wasn't some dry, dusty, unappealing place. There really were a lot of far out and crazy ideas that were put forth and explored to considerable depth, and that, you know, as nice as Java and Ruby and all the new dynamic languages are, it's still possible to, you know, be adventurous and try to think new thoughts. And so some ways the talk we gave, that was the reprise of the Hopple talk, was a good onward talk, because it said, here, look at the past. Wasn't it crazy? Why can't we be crazy again? Not crazy as in nuts, crazy as in thinking new things. I think we need to do that. I think we're on the brink of either an interesting peak to scale or a valley to fall into. We're not going to be able to make the clock rates go much faster. We're going to have to go parallel with multi-core. And we're not well set up to do that yet. So the time is ripe for rethinking what programming is. So the next few years could be really exciting, I think. Not advocating going back to the old ideas, but going back to, you know, the adventuresome spirit that a lot of the researchers had. Some of them, sadly, passed away.
And that leads us back to the week-long workshop you and Kevin Sullivan are doing on conference photography.
When Guy Steele and I were preparing our History of Programming Languages keynote, we noticed that quite a few of the people that whose work we talked about had passed away. So we wanted to have kind of a tribute or an in memoriam for them at the end. So what we wanted to do is just put up a, you know, picture of them, you know, doing what they did, and then just, you know, list their, you know, birth and death dates. And we found that finding pictures of some of the great names, Herb Simon in particular, just really hard to do. We could find formal portraits, but the pictures that were of him teaching or lecturing or working with students, you know, you could see him, oh, isn't that Herb Simon way back there? Or badly taken or badly composed or, you know, out of focus or lit poorly, but mostly they just didn't exist. We just could not find them. And so I thought, gee, you know, now that people bring their digital cameras to conferences, there's lots of opportunities to take pictures of the famous and to be famous. And there's, like with any activity where you produce something, you know, you can be taught and you can develop skill at it. And so there's another individual, Kevin Sullivan from the University of Virginia. He and I turn out to be fairly avid digital photographers. We're relatively new to it. I did a lot more film photography. So we proposed to Uppsala, and I've talked to ACM about it, that it wouldn't be bad to train people how to do this so that when they go and take pictures, they're good pictures. You know, there was one guy who was interested in attending the workshop. So the way you attend the workshop is sooner or later, there'll be a pointer on the Uppsala website pointing to the workshop. If you're eager now listening to this podcast, if you just go to dreamsongs.com on the front page, there's a pointer to, you know, the information you need to apply to the workshop. One of the guys who was interested, oh, you know, I've been taking pictures at conferences since, you know, 1872, and, you know, I've got, you know, 100 million photographs of all the famous people. So, you know, if you just need a picture of someone, let me know. And so I said, well, send me your best photo. You know, and he sent his best, two or three best photos, and, you know, the faces were green because it was with film and he hadn't preserved them. You know, he didn't scan them in until too late. You know, you could kind of see them off in the distance. They had this startled look on their faces, you know, and it was composed with them dead center in front of a blackboard and all washed out and just really not that great. You know, I pointed out, I said, well, here's how you could have improved it, and here's some examples. He said, oh, huh, yeah, never thought of that. So what it is an all-week workshop. It starts on Sunday. On Sunday, we teach the basics of the techniques of photography, you know, using Photoshop, which sadly you have to do because, you know, a big problem with digital sensors, people don't realize this, is they're linear. And film is not linear, and that non-linearity helps a lot. With digital photography, it's very hard to get the range of sort of contrast that you would like, the range of light. So you need Photoshop to help you with that. Then every day during the week, people go off and they photograph, and in the mornings after we do a writer's workshop, we're going to publish the stuff, probably on Flickr. We might even make a book of conference photographs at the end. And we're hoping that other folks will sort of pick this up and carry it ahead. But that's the reason. Our pioneers are passing away. It'd be nice to have good historical record of them.
Dick Gabriel, last year's Uppsala chair, on the many things he'll be participating in at this year's Uppsala. Thank you for listening to the Uppsala podcast. If you want to know more about the conference or would like to listen to additional podcast episodes, visit the Uppsala website at uppsala.org. This episode is released under a Creative Commons license.